This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina post-game podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Rate us, review us, subscribe on iTunes, YouTube most of the time. We're not on YouTube for these post-game podcasts. But leave us a rating, five-star rating, ask us a question on there. We'll get right to it. Post-game podcast means I've got Michael Brooker with me. Carolina, first round of the Maui Invitation in Asheville, North Carolina. 78. It's weird. It's still weird to me. It reminds me of friends of mine that were like, I'm dating a girl from Nashville, North Carolina. 78-51 over UNLV. Not the running Rebels of old, Mike. It is started out little interesting, but once Carolina got it figured out, they rolled. Your overall take?
Yeah, there early on, I was a little worried there. 13-0, and they kind of were hearkening back to their running Rebels days. But but once we settled down and started knocking down some shots and just got into a little bit more of a rhythm offensively, it was the overpowering size and the rebounding advantage, obviously, and like I said, being able to hit some outside shots to take off some of the pressure on the big guys was obviously key and kind of got us in rhythm and got us rolling there in the first half.
Yeah, I want to talk about it a little bit later in this show about the doubling the post and how you're supposed to handle that, how you're taught to handle that in Carolina's system. But let's start off talking about one individual, and I like to do this every post game we do. We pick sort of a player of the game, certainly not the highest score of the game. That goes to R.J. Davis on 5 of 9 and 3 of 4 from 3. I want to talk about Walker Kessler, Mike. This is a guy, and I said it just a minute off the air, this is a guy that if he played 15, 20, 25 years ago, he'd be by far one of those guys that you're talking about, player of the year and all that type. I know he's still young, but wow, he's just got some serious basketball skills, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's super polished, especially for a guy so young, and he keeps the ball high and, you know, kept it high on a couple different occasions where he just went back up and dunked it or kept it high on the and one there late in the second half. And, you know, he's another guy that, you know, if Carolina wasn't so loaded in the post, he'd be playing 25, 30 minutes a game, probably averaging 18 and 10 or something like that, you know. But obviously very, very impressive tonight. 7 points, 6 boards, 4 of them offensive rebounds, in limited minutes, probably 13, 14 minutes, but some very impressive play from him. And it was good to see him get some extended minutes after, you know, having some of the limited minutes due to COVID issues prior to the first game. So I know everybody was glad to see him get a few more minutes and really impress in those minutes.
Yeah, 14 minutes, like you said, 7 and 6. Let me ask you a question coming from a coaching standpoint and just seeing it in your days at Carolina. How tough is it to teach a big to keep the ball up? Because if you're 7-1 and you put it at your waist, you might as well be 6-5 like the rest of the guys in there. How difficult is that to teach? And it doesn't look like Kessler is one of those guys that has to be reminded of that.
No, he's not. And I think all of our guys have been drilled really well by the coaching staff. They do a great job of post-development in the Carolina program and have for a really long time, back all the way back to Coach Guthridge, teaching the bigs and Brendan and Chris and all those guys to keep it high. And it is difficult. I think it's a habit. I'm trying to bring it down and generate enough power to get back up with it, especially at that level. But those guys have obviously been well drilled and are highly skilled as well. And Kessler showed, like I said, tonight. And I think all our bigs are pretty efficient at doing that and maximizing their chances to to get that ball back up on the rim and hopefully maximize and get and-one opportunities as well.
Yeah, Kessler he's tall anyway. He's got a long reach. He's just too much for those UNLV guys to handle in those limited minutes. We talked a lot about Sharp in the first game, and as freshmen are prone to do, especially early in their freshman season, Sharp really disappeared in this one. Had a rough go of it early, 4 turnovers in 16 minutes, 1 of 4 from the free throw line. That's going to happen, right? I mean, freshmen, everybody expects in this day of basketball, expects freshmen to come in and dominate out of the gate. And when they do, folks need to really appreciate it because it's not as easy as it looks. And Sharp sort of, you know, from game one to game two sort of proves that.
No question. You know, he came in and obviously having the debut that he had a few nights ago, obviously he probably was right up on top of the scouting chart for the scouting list for UNLV. So they doubled hard and he didn't handle it great early on and had a couple balls that got, you know, people got hands on and led to turnovers and, you know, got fouled a couple times and went to the line and, you know, was 1 for 4. So just a, you know, overall, like you said, a tough outing, but you know, he's going to continue to get experience and continue to eat up boards when they come his way. I think he ended up with 6 rebounds a night, which is nothing to sneeze at, and you know, 12, 13 minutes of action. But yeah, struggled a little bit on the offensive end, but he'll be fine. Obviously, you saw the first game, the flashes of brilliance, and he'll continue to show that even in games where he struggles. But yeah, obviously we have other guys that can step in and pick up the slack when he has an off night in the post like he did tonight.
Roy Williams, like you said, and Carolina's got, you know, what some have already said, you know, the best backcourt in the nation. I'm not convinced of that yet. Got a ways to go, especially given Baycott's struggles at times last year, and then you have the freshman in Sharp and Kessler. Brooks clearly the class of the backcourt. But something I saw and something I'd like to get your take on is, and I think we'll see it a lot, is Carolina's going to have to deal with the post being doubled frequently. I think it'll be that, you know, that situation throughout the season. If I'm an opposing coach, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to force Carolina to hit some threes to beat them. How does the Carolina system teach the approach to doubles? It looks like spinning away from it and making a quick move is certainly part of that. The process that, you know, Roy Williams teaches, and of course that's passed down from Dean Smith. But, you know, what's the best way to approach a team that's going to double your bigs all night and make it difficult, like UNLV was doing early?
I think we struggle with it early, obviously, either holding it too long and not creating that separation by squaring strong and stepping out, you know, 1 or 2 strong dribbles and getting some separation to be able to make that pass. So when they sprint off that double team, they have longer to run with, and hopefully you can take advantage of bad closeouts or long closeouts. You know, we obviously have some bigger posts, you know, 6'10", 6'11", Kessler being 7'1". So that obviously helps as well to be able to square and be able to throw over the top of it. But taking that strong dribble out and just having the ability to get it out quickly, or I think later in the half we were able to catch it deep in the post and be able to make a quick move before the double got there, which I think was key as well, and being able to attack it effectively and efficiently. But obviously making shots, you know, being able to kick it out. And I think we were 7 for 19 from three with, you know, Play Tech and Davis being the major contributors there, 5 out of 8 from three for them. I think they were 9 for 15 or 10 for 15 from the floor in general. So just being able to knock down some of those shots to take off some of the pressure and not allow those teams to really double so hard where they have to respect the fact that on a kick out that we can step up and knock those shots down. So I think that was key tonight to have those couple guys knock down shots. Now, obviously we had a couple guys struggle.
Leakey, you know, 1 for 9. Caleb Love, 2 for 9. But you're right, Davis and Playtech picked it up.
They picked it up big, and Playtech was big early when we were down. He kind of kept us in it. You know, I think he had 8 points really early. So both those guys, you know, if they can knock down shots like that and keep people honest, and then when they do kick it out, you know, Leakey can take people off the bounce, and Davis can, you know, take people off the bounce if they pressure too much on the perimeter. So, you know, it was much more promising after the first, 6-7 minutes of the way in which we handled those double teams in the post.
Yeah, Carolina, of course, down 13-0, ended up winning by 27. What's that, a 40-point swing? Wow. Couple that with I believe the women over the weekend, UNC women were down 21 and ended up winning by 25. So some big turnarounds for Carolina basketball the last two games they've played. Look, you were a shooter, a spot-up shooter maybe, back in the day. How would you assess a guy like Andrew Platek's game? He's going to get a ton of open looks this season, and maybe Anthony Harris comes back and takes some of his minutes, but I see Platek getting a ton of open looks off of doubled post and things like that. What's the mindset of a shooter there?
I think the mindset of a shooter is just, the next one's going in. Obviously he struggled last game, and this game, I can't remember if he missed his first one or not, but obviously he has the confidence to step up and keep taking them. And he knows that he brings a lot more to the table other than just shooting. So he's going to continue to get opportunities. He plays good, solid defense. He's an intangibles guy. So he's going to have opportunities to be on the court and to be able to knock down shots. Like you said, if they keep doubling, somebody's going to have open looks. So he did a good job tonight of being in rhythm, catching in a rhythm, and just kind of starting to feel good about himself. Like I said, I tell my guys that I coach now, all it takes is one to get going. So you got to think the next one's going in. And he did that tonight, and it was really a big boost there, especially when we were struggling early.
The jump from game one to game two, is that where you usually see? So well, I guess 2020 makes everything so much different this year. But game one, they were a little sloppy, did what they had to do to win. Game two, what did you see? Maybe specifically on the defensive end, or something that we didn't see in game one, that just comes from actually getting a game against, other people in that benefited that you saw tonight.
Yeah, I think it was good to see them get punched in the mouth a little bit early, and just to continue to play our style, play the way we play, and continue to just challenge shots. I think when they switched over Brooks on the guy for UNLV, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but he was really getting going there, and they switched off Leaky onto him, and I believe he ended up about 7 for 20 or 7 for 21 from the field after starting out really hot, and I thought that was key. Obviously, Leaky was all over the place. I think he had 10 rebounds and numerous deflections and challenge shots. And, obviously he didn't shoot it well or play great offensively. I think he was 1 for 9, but had 4 offensive rebounds and just was kind of a glue guy. Took some shots that coach probably wasn't too excited about, but he's going to have to be a threat. So, I mean, you do want him to be a threat and be able to knock it down, but no, I thought defensively after that first stretch there, they were really active, really controlled the boards. I think we had a 20-plus, 24-plus rebound advantage there. I think we had about 18 offensive rebounds. So just really controlled the glass there. So that was good to see after initially getting punched in the mouth early.
Yeah, to your point, Hamilton in the first half, of course, he scored 28 or 29 in their first game. In the first half, 5 for 10. 11 points, 4 rebounds. Second half, Hamilton, 2 for 9, no rebounds, and just 4 points. Of course, UNLV shot 6 of 36 from the field, 3 for 21 in the second half. Just brutal, brutal basketball. Carolina's defense certainly had something to do with that. But it's good to see Carolina adjust and get active on a team that UNLV is not good, but Hamilton's a solid player, and Hamilton will make some noise this season. And Carolina was able to take him out. You mentioned Leaky Black, and we've been harsh on him at times in this podcast over the years. And 1 for 9 shooting and 1 for 3 is just it's not cutting it. I do like the 2 for 2 from the free throw line, but 10 points, 2 assists. Speak a little bit more, Mike, to that type performance. I mean, some guys just can't shoot. But a lot of times, if you can't shoot or if you're not scoring, you do nothing else. And that makes it rough on the team. We talked about that a lot back when Bryce Johnson was a young guy. If he wasn't scoring, he didn't do much in the box score. And then he turned into just had a fantastic senior season. But Leaky struggles from the floor, but gets 10 rebounds. I mean, Roy Williams can live with the shooting. if he's bringing that. He certainly brought that tonight. Led the team in rebounds by 3, I think. Brooks second with 7.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I don't think anybody really expects Leaky to score 12 points a game. I really don't. We have so many other weapons that, you know, obviously anything offensively is probably gravy, to be quite honest with you. We need to be a threat. You know, 6-8 points a game, I think, is reasonable expectation. And knocking down some open mid-range jumpers, I think, is a reasonable expectation. But I don't expect him to, you know, go ham from 3 or anything like that. But, you know, 1 for 9, you know, obviously it was a game that struggled. But, yeah, I think he's a guy that obviously is an extremely effective glue guy, great defender, active, long, 6'8", and long and lanky. Can get a rebound and push it up the court in transition, doesn't have to get it to the point guard, challenges shots, and like you said, 10 rebounds, goes down there and battles. So he doesn't have to score, like I said, 12, 14 a game for us, but I do think he needs to be a threat in that mid-range and continue to be disruptive defensively and help out on the glass like he did tonight, leading the team in rebounding with 10 boards. So you have to have guys like him, I think, to get places where you want to go. But I don't think we're really dependent on him to be a major scorer, but it would definitely help us out if he can chip in 6 to 8 a game for sure.
Yeah, I like the gravy comment because I agree with that. Whatever he gives you in the scoring column, certainly that for Roy Williams' team, and you'll take 10 rebounds all night, especially 4 offensive. Those are game-changing type things in close ball games. And look, if you look back to all of Carolina's best teams, especially the national championship teams, they had guys like that. You know, they had guys that did the dirty work. And if Leakey's not going to shoot it well, he can get his hands dirty and do that type stuff. I think it benefits Carolina. First round of the Maui, I believe, I'd like to see him play Stanford tomorrow. We're recording this show, obviously, as Stanford is playing now. But what do you want to see tomorrow and then Wednesday, whoever they play? What improvement or what areas of improvement do you want to see from this Carolina team over the next 2 nights?
You know, just continue to get off to a little bit better start, obviously, because not every team is going to be like UNLV and be able to, you know, obviously we did pick it up dramatically there and made them make mistakes and made them shoot poorly to a certain degree, challenging a lot of shots and dominating the glass as we did. But just getting off to a great start from the get-go, I think, is important against, you know, some of these higher quality teams. Obviously, Stanford has, you know, Zaire Williams, who we went after hard, and, you know, he's a high-level wing. And they've obviously dramatically increased their talent pool, their talent base at Stanford with Jared Haas and his recruiting, his staff's recruiting. So if we do end up playing Stanford, it'll be interesting to see how we handle those wings and continue to be disruptive with Leaky and challenging Zaire Williams and just like I said, coming off from the jump, just being ready to roll, being efficient from the jump. Let's see. I want to see Caleb Love be a little more efficient. Obviously had a very strong showing in the first game. Didn't shoot it great, but still controlled the flow and he obviously shows flashes tonight of being really good. But just you know, being able to. You know, I think he was 2 for 9 and 0 for 5 from 3. So having him being a consistent threat from the outside, I think we'll continue to once again open things up and get him out in transition and hopefully get a few easy things for him as well, I think will be important.
Yeah, I mean, and he's got to – he's still learning. He's still a freshman. He's got to learn at his college. And, you know, he took that drive up, I think it was in the first half. Looked like he wanted to dunk it, decided he was going to lay it up, and the guy put it in the crowd. I mean, that's probably not anything he had to deal with too terribly much in high school, but it's a work in progress. Carolina beats UNLV by 27 after being down 13. Looks ahead to either Stanford or Alabama. Carolina, of course, saw Alabama in the Bahamas last year. They've lost a ton. They still got John Petty, and I think John Petty hit like 6 or 7 threes last year against Carolina down there in the Bahamas. So play them in the Bahamas 1 year, potentially play them in Maui, Asheville, North Carolina version, Maui the next. Mike, it's always been a pleasure. Don't think we'll catch up with you tomorrow post-game, but we'll definitely talk to you again Wednesday night.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Hopefully we'll have a great showing tomorrow, and we'll be talking about hopefully the championship game on Wednesday.
Indeed. You've been listening to the Inside Carolina Postgame Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. That is Michael Brooker, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Visit them take advantage of the sales. Cyber Monday sales was going on today. You've got all sorts of stuff. Get every Carolina gear piece you need. Support local. And rate us, review us, subscribe on iTunes and on YouTube when we're there. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.